from the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
Whether the commission chooses to adopt the Hillsdale model or the University of Michigan model has not yet been decided, but it will be all critical and all important in establishing what will possibly prove to be a model, a national model, for the new redistricting process.
This is your host, Scott Bertram, and that's Stephen Markman, retired Michigan Supreme Court Justice and professor of constitutional law at Hillsdale College. He'll join us today to talk about his recent report on redistricting in the state of Michigan and how it might impact states around the country. Stephen, thanks for joining us.
Great being here. Thanks for having me.
And we discussed today a couple of pieces you've written, one for the Wall Street Journal, the University of Michigan Guide to Gerrymandering, one for the Detroit News, Redistricting Michigan Depends on the Definition of Community, and a large report as well that you've written on the subject of redistricting. As we look toward this redistricting process across the country, all states are redrawing maps. Why is this conversation different in Michigan?
Well, as you may know, in 2018, the people of Michigan voted to change their process in certain ways. In particular, they replaced the role of the state legislatures in the redistricting process. They had been, basically since the beginning of our statehood, they had been responsible for establishing the districts. And now we have in their place a new commission, which is basically comprised of 13 individuals whose names have largely been drawn out of a hat. It's been a truly random selection process, and we have these random citizens who've been selected. There is a partisan balance. That was the only non-random aspect of the selection. And they, instead of the legislature, are now empowered to make the redistricting decisions. They weren't elected. They can't be unelected. I think they basically serve until the next redistricting process in 10 years. And the concern right now is that the standards that they're employing to reconfigure the districts in Michigan are in significant dispute. And Hillsdale has aligned itself against the University of Michigan in terms of the kind of model that we think they ought to be following, but will not necessarily be following. Mm-hmm. They've not made the decision. They've not made the critical decisions on some of the issues that are before them.
So what does this Michigan report, this University of Michigan report, what do they lay out as how they would define a community of interest? What would qualify?
Well, the new theory that they undertake is a theory that's not based upon what Hillsdale believe has been the traditional standard for creating these building blocks for the redistricting process, namely geographic boundaries around the state. That is, the real communities in which people live, their counties, cities, townships, and villages. Instead, the University of Michigan is seeking to establish as the new community of interest districts that are basically predicated upon special interest groups, identity groups, and affinity groups. And to me, this is really incompatible with what their principal mission is, and that is to address the defects in the redistricting process that the people saw, specifically the susceptibility of the previous process to gerrymandering and partisan considerations and political gamesmanship. We think that they would be essentially perpetuating the same ills of the process, albeit by a different means. They would basically be camouflaging that they are retaining the what were perceived to be the defects of the earlier process, but again under a different name.
Talking with Stephen Markman, retired Michigan Supreme Court Justice and professor of constitutional law at Hillsdale College, here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. You can find his writing at the Wall Street Journal, the University of Michigan Guide to Gerrymandering, also in the Detroit News recently, Redistricting Michigan Depends on Definition of Community. So there is a Hillsdale College report that you helped to author. What does that report outline and recommend when it comes to these more historical understandings of communities of interest?
Well, it recognizes, first of all, that the new constitutional amendment is extraordinarily broad. It gives the new commission extraordinary discretion to define the community of interest as it sees fit. So we don't say anywhere that they can't adopt the University of Michigan approach. They can literally adopt any approach they want to. We simply say the more responsible approach would be to look closely at what Hillsdale has urged upon it, which is that they continue to base the community of interest building blocks upon geographical linkings and geographical boundaries rather than upon a variety of other considerations. Let me give you some illustrations if I can, Scott.
Mm-hmm.
When I say that they're focused, when the University of Michigan is focused upon different kinds of considerations, they talk about race, ethnicity, and religion explicitly. They talk about immigrant language and creative arts communities. They talk about communities with a supposed shared vision of the future. They talk about communities concerned about environmental issues and hazards. They talk about communities linked to public policy issues. They talk about such a broad variety of considerations that, as I say, the commission essentially has unfettered discretion to select whatever kind of community it wishes to. That itself is a dubious amount of public authority to be investing in any kind of public agency, particularly one selected like the new commission is selected. We, again, emphasize the kinds of communities of interest that all of us have traditionally been a part of, not just the favored and not just the favored parts of our population. All of us, as I've indicated, belong to a community of interest when it's defined along geographical lines. And we would urge the commission, which has not yet made a decision on what it's going to do, to look upon the traditional understanding of a community of interest.
This is a Michigan-specific question at the moment as this committee attempts to figure out what they're going to do. Might this decision, though, have an impact on what other states do with some of these similar boards, independent boards, when it comes to redistricting? If not in this cycle, perhaps looking forward to 2030, could this set a precedent for other states?
I think it's a very good question, Scott, and maybe in some ways that's the $64,000 question. The University of Michigan, again, is explicit in arguing that its new theory of representation may be a model for the nation. And there are other states that are looking upon the Michigan experience to see whether it's a worthwhile experience. Now, I understand the great reform of 2018, which was to replace the legislature by these commissions. That's not what's dividing Hillsdale and the University of Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
It's what meaning, what definition we give to the community of interest. Nobody disagrees that the new commission has been determined by the people of this state to replace the legislature in the process. Whatever the merits or demerits of that, that's been voted upon, and that's part of the Constitution. What is not clearly a part of the Constitution is how we define the community of interest. And whether the commission chooses to adopt the Hillsdale model or the University of Michigan model has not yet been decided. But it will be all critical and all important in establishing what will eventually and possibly, at least possibly, prove to be a model, a national model for the new redistricting process.
You can read more at the Wall Street Journal. The University of Michigan Guide to Gerrymandering is the op-ed there. Or over at the Detroit News, Redistricting Michigan Depends on Definition of Community. Stephen Markman, retired Supreme Court Justice, Professor of Constitutional Law at Hillsdale College. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thanks for your time, Scott. I appreciate it.
Up next, we talk with Gail Harriet. Her latest book is A Dubious Expediency, How Race Preferences Damaged Higher Education. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. You can follow us on Twitter at Hillsdale Radio or find us on Facebook. We're joined now by Gail Harriet, professor of law at the University of San Diego, member of the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights, and also co-editor of the new book, A Dubious Expediency, How Race Preferences Damage Higher Education. Gail, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
You are the co-editor of the book and also pen a couple of essays included inside. I want to ask first about the title, because it is not just the title, it is the title of the essay you write inside the book as well, A Dubious Expediency. Where does that title come from?
Well, you know, that title comes from Justice Stanley Mosk, who was on the California Supreme Court back in the 1970s. Some of your listeners may remember the case of Bakke versus the University of California Board of Regents. And he used that term in his opinion for the court. He was appalled. The University of California was discriminating against individuals like Alan Bakke. He was the proverbial white male and a Vietnam veteran, had excellent credentials, but students with credentials that were much lower than Alan Bakke's were getting into medical school, and he was excluded. And that's when Justice Stanley Mosk said that he thought that these race-based preferences were a dubious expediency. He believed that while, you know, arguably well-meaning, this was not going to do good for anyone. And the California Supreme Court issued a very strong opinion against race preferential admissions.
So tell us a bit more about the book. There are a number of outstanding authors here, including John Ellis and Peter Wood, Heather McDonald, yourself. What's the goal of putting these essays together in A Dubious Expediency?
Well, co-editor Myman Schwarzschild and I got to thinking about a year ago that you hardly ever hear the voices of academics who do not believe that race preferential admissions are a good thing. You know, these days it's hard for conservative voices on colleges and universities. So we wanted to get together essays by people that we knew opposed race preferential admissions. And that includes some people who are not academics, like Heather McDonald and Peter Kersenau, who is my co-commissioner on the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights. And we thought it was important to get out to the American people some of the very strong arguments, I believe, against race preferential admissions, and to discuss the way that they really have hurt higher education.
Gail Harriet with us. A Dubious Expediency is the new book. So have race preferential admissions policies backfired? Have they not achieved the results that people hoped, predicted they would?
Boy, have they ever backfired, and nobody wants to admit it on campus. Here's the case. We would have more African-American physicians, more African-American engineers, more African-American scientists, in all probability more African-American lawyers and college professors if colleges and universities did not engage in race preferential admissions. Now, that's counterintuitive to some people, but let me explain it. Some students are going to outperform their entering academic credentials when they get to college, and some students are going to underperform those entering academic credentials. But most students, no matter what their race, are going to perform in the general range that their academic credentials suggest. And so what happens is when colleges and universities engage in race preferences, the racial minority students, the underrepresented minority students, are going to tend to get grades that are below average. And the extent to which this is true is pretty strong, unfortunately. Now, that doesn't mean that these aren't good students. It's just that they're not competing against the students that they're most likely to be able to do well against. And students actually are more likely to successfully major in science and engineering if they go to a school where their entering credentials are in the ballpark with other students. Mm-hmm. So it means that a student you know, who gets a preference, and it's not just race. This is also legacy preferences or preferences for students who have, you know, powerful parents or grandparents. When they go to the school where they're not in a good competitive position.
Gail, have Asian American students, minority students, become victims of these race preferential admissions policies?
Oh, definitely, definitely. Asian American students, on average, have higher academic credentials, you know, going into college than other students. And in some ways, it is a replay in history of what happened in the 1920s with Jewish students who, on average, tended to do very well in high school. And when they applied to college, you know, had they been treated fairly, they'd have done extremely well. But Ivy League schools back in the 1920s started what they called Jewish quotas, which limited the number of Jewish students who could get into Ivy League schools. The same thing is happening now with Asian American students. If you are Asian American, and that is particularly Chinese American or Korean American, but also to a lesser degree some of the other ethnicities, you have to be that much better than other students in order to get into a particular selective college or university. And that, to me, is un-American.
Which leads me to my final question, which is, we have heard about these cases making it up to the Supreme Court. Is this an issue that will be remedied through these individual schools making changes, or does it have to come through Supreme Court action?
I think we need Supreme Court action. There is a case pending before the Supreme Court right now. They haven't decided whether to take it. It's called Students for Fair Admissions versus Harvard. And the Supreme Court was asked back a few months ago to accept the case for review. And to be very blunt, they're stalling. They didn't decide. Usually they would decide within the you know, before the end of June, which is the end of their term. But in this case, what they did is they called for the Department of Justice to weigh in with their opinion. And, you know, that's kind of a joke. Everyone knows the Biden administration's opinion on this. They're going to say, don't take the case. But that's what the Supreme Court did. I nevertheless remain optimistic that they will take the case. The case concerns Asian American students and how Harvard University discriminates against Asian Americans. But the issues apply basically across the board. So I'm optimistic they'll take it. Even if they do take it and we get a very strong opinion, it took decades to get ourselves in the position that we're in now with such overwhelming preferential treatment based on skin color. It'll take a while to dig out of this, but, you know, we need to start. We need to start.
Gail Harriott, co-editor of A Dubious Expediency, How Race Preferences Damage Higher Education. Gail, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thanks, Scott.
Up next, we talk with Ben Beyer from Hillsdale's Education Department. His final installment, taking a look at the concept of definition. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at kcnr1460.com. Join Sue McClain weekday mornings from 6 to 7 for the Sue McClain News Hour, where you'll hear the up-to-the-minute local news, national and international news, weather, sports, and a whole lot more. Followed by Free Fire Radio from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. with Carl and Linda Bach. From 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, equal opportunity critics. From noon to 3, learn how to get out of debt with Dave Ramsey. From 3 to 6, don't miss constitutional expert Mark Levin. Monday through Thursday night, starting at 6 p.m., we have local shows featuring everything from the paranormal, local history, North State Now, and unsung heroes of our area. From 7 to 9, tune in to Ben Shapiro, your local downtown radio station, KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at kcnr1460.com.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere ag and turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
North State Now is a magazine formatted show at 6 p.m. every Thursday night. The first Thursday is yours truly, Linda Bott, featuring what's going on in our town. The second Thursday is hosted by Michelle Slade, featuring heroes of the North State. The third Thursday is hosted by none other than James Masada and Rhonda Alvey from Enjoy the Magazine and Enjoy the Store. Our newest edition is the fourth Thursday of the month, Women of Vision. That's North State Now, Thursday at 6 p.m., also streaming on KCNR 14. 60.com.
Hi, this is Matt with Liberty Unabashed. It's time to embrace American values. Our society is based on the freedom, not begging the government for permission. It's time to wake up, my brothers and sisters. Come check out my show every other Sunday, 8 to 9, Liberty Unabashed.
I expect it to be a lot easier.
I didn't know what step to take next.
I was transitioning from the military.
I was a vehicle gunner.
An avionics specialist.
I missed my unit, my family.
Playing with my daughter, I'd felt like a stranger.
I didn't have a clear sense of what to do next.
And then I thought, if I'm going through this, other veterans have gone through it too, right?
So I reached out, and I saw that I wasn't alone.
Go to maketheconnection.net to learn how other veterans have overcome the challenges of transitioning out of the military.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. For more information about Hillsdale College, for alumni, for prospective students, or for friends of Hillsdale, head to hillsdale.edu. We're joined by Dr. Benjamin Beyer, Associate Professor of Education at Hillsdale College. Dr. Beyer, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
Wrapping up this time our occasional series on definition and continuing from our very last time, the look at technical definitions, the latter two today, reintroduce us and maybe remind us of the past two we just did.
Yeah, but by all means. So we're trying to find these various strategies to define that really get at the nature or essence of a thing. That's the technical definition, as opposed to one that's just, you know, using words, synonyms, metaphors. So last time we looked at definition by accident, where you might, you know, accumulate things, a group of things that aren't unique to that which you're trying to define. So, you know, dog, lots of things are carnivorous, not just dogs, but if you sort of combine carnivorous with domesticated, with able to bark, then maybe you've sort of collected enough accidents to set the dog apart. Mm-hmm. So there's that. But better than that is definition by property. So you might define triangle, and you might say, right, a triangle is a closed figure with interior angles equal to 180 degrees. And so you found in interior angles equal to 180 degrees, you found something totally unique to triangles among closed figures. But there's this lingering sense, if you know more about math than me, you have this lingering sense, that there's this lingering sense that's a result of something prior, mm-hmm. some cause. And so today, with essential definition and definition by cause, we get to those prior things that are really at the heart of that which we're seeking to define.
Let's tackle essential definition. What do we mean by that?
Yeah, so essential definition has two parts. So with the thing that you're trying to define, you're both trying to grab that which is more general than the thing you're trying to define. You know, so a human being is an animal, for instance, or, you know, a flower is a plant, something like that. So you're trying to find the general category, but not too general, right? You're not trying to, you know, a human being is a living thing. Well, you know, animals better, because it's, right, there's lots of things that are living things that aren't animals. So the general thing, and then you add to it what's called the specific difference. So what distinguishes the species human being from all those animals? What's the thing that marks it, that makes it what it is?
And how is that perhaps We talked last time about getting better definitions. How does this help us toward a better definition?
Yeah. So, you know, with the triangle example that I used a moment ago, so the definition by property has that general thing, closed figure, and then the property interior angles equal to 180 degrees. But now an essential definition has that genus still, that general thing, closed figure, but now, right, three-sided. Because why does a triangle have interior angles equal to 180 degrees? Because it has three sides. So with three-sided, you've found the specific difference that shows you what the triangle actually is. Or with human being, you know, the other day,
right.
We had all these properties, able to make his own food, able to make art, et cetera. Well, what's the cause of all those properties? It's the specific difference, rational. So man, you know, as has been so often said, is the rational animal. That's the essential definition that gets right at the heart of the nature or essence of the human being.
Are there a couple of different ways we can get toward essential definition?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think this is really a practical matter for those who have been kind of following along through the series. You know, if you're actually, you know, just trying to define something, you know, you've got maybe this toolkit of all these different types of definition that we've been enumerating, but how do you make a beginning? And logicians sometimes talk about three pathways to get to the definition. So one is by division. Let me explain. So you're trying to define, let's just keep going with human beings, since all listeners are human beings. Well, I suppose your dog may be listening too. So with by division, you try to reach up to the most general thing above man. So, you know, we said that animal is general, but we also said living thing is general. So, you know, what's the most kind of generic way you can speak of the human being? And so traditionally in Aristotelian philosophy, you'd say he's a substance.
Mm-hmm.
And then I call this path by division. You start to sort of divide down. So all substances are either bodily or non-bodily. All bodily substances are either living or not living. All living substances are either animals or not animals. You work your way down to get to human being. And so then, okay, you divide animal into human being and, you know, beast. And so there, right, in that final division, you've both achieved the specific difference.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, human being's different from beast with rationality, but he's an animal, which also really means he's a substance. And so you kind of start as generally as you can and work your way down.
Talking with Dr. Benjamin Beyer from the Education Department here at Hillsdale about definition.
The opposite of starting really generally is to start as specifically as possible. So instead of beginning with, right, human being, right, this species, right, you begin with individuals, right, you know, John and Sally and Susie and Billy, and you're trying, this path might be called from collection. So you've got each of these individuals and you're comparing them and thinking about your experience, you know, what's common to each of them and only to things like them, and then you rise up to the species.
Mm-hmm.
So whereas division kind of divides down, right, from collection, you begin from individuals and go up, you might say. So that's maybe the everyman path, right? We all kind of have done that in some way to have
right,
a rough and ready
right.
sense of what tree, dog, fox is. And then the final path relates to what we spoke about last week from property. So, you know, if you're thinking about the ability of a human being to produce art, that's unique to the human being. So you're really neither coming down to human being or going up to it. It's kind of at the level of human, but you're having to, if you're thinking spatially, right, you're having to almost move across from that property to human being itself to maybe get to, from the property to the essential definition, you know, man is a rational animal.
Yes. And now, by cause, this final path we'll look at by cause. What do we mean?
Yeah. So again, each time we've been visiting, we've been talking about how this works in the view of somebody like Aristotle or Thomas Aquinas. And so Aristotle famously or infamously thinks that things have four causes. And so there's the material cause, the formal cause, the efficient cause, and the final cause. And really, I think for our purposes, if we've found the general thing and the specific difference, the genus and the specific difference, that's a lot like the material and formal causes. So just to continue with the example of human being, perhaps you're getting weary of it, but it's what we know best.
We'll really know it by the end of this. I mean, exactly what we're talking about.
What's the material cause of the human being? Well, it's animality, right? We're embodied substances. Aristotle illustrates this actually talking about a statue, right? So the material cause is the bronze or the wood or whatever it is of the statue. So our bodiliness is the material cause. Then the formal cause is, right, what the thing is. And so for human being, the formal cause is arguably rationality or the soul, that which distinguishes us from the other animals. So it's really when we have a definition by cause that's doing more than just an essential definition, it's not so much matter and form as it is the other two causes, final and efficient. So the efficient cause, sometimes it's called the agent cause, is how something comes to be.
Dr. Benjamin Beyer, Associate Professor of Education at Hillsdale College, thank you so much for taking us through this journey through definition.
My pleasure. Thanks again.
Up next, we talk with Illinois State Representative Tom Morrison, a graduate of Hillsdale College, about what Hillsdale taught him and how it helped prepare him for his time in public service. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
This is RC from Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor. Today's review is Michelef Grande Bold, a classic Maduro stick with a rich, dark, oily Ecuadorian broadleaf wrapper surrounding Nicaragua's best tobacco. Full-bodied and full flavor, your palate will delight with hints of dark chocolate, nuts, and cedar. Come down to the best cigar shop around, Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
A building that's meant to last is not built overnight. And for centuries, the cornerstone has been crucial to guide each brick and wall that comes after. A strong community relies on many cornerstones. So at Cornerstone Community Bank, we've taken our name to heart. Whether it's your business or your family, we'll provide the financial cornerstone that you need to build on. We're local. We're community. We're your cornerstone. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
You don't have to be a Native American to access quality health care. Redding Rancheria's Churn Creek Healthcare and Central Valley Healthcare are open to anyone with Medicare, Medi-Cal, or Partnership Health. Our health system never charges co-pays, deductibles, share of costs, or even a sliding fee scale. Patients never have to pay to access quality, compassionate health care. Redding Rancheria Tribal Health System, changing how healthcare is delivered. Call us today to schedule an appointment.
As restrictions continue to be lifted in Shasta County, many businesses are set to reopen, and KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and KCNR1460.com wants to help spread the word. So, if you are reopening your business, planning on opening a business for the first time, or are already open for business, KCNR has many advertising packages to choose from. Give us a call at 530-605-4565 and talk to a KCNR representative today. That's 530-605-4565.
On over for savings at Quick and Clean Car Wash at the corner of Market and Eureka Way next to Dutch Bros in downtown Redding. Buy 5 car wash coupons and get one free, or buy 10 and get 3 free. Quick and Clean is a family-owned business. They offer only the highest quality service. Quick and Clean Car Wash at the corner of Market and Eureka Way next to Dutch Bros in downtown Redding. Quick and Clean.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has a chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. You can get an email every time there's a new episode of the program. Head to radiohour.hillsdale.edu and enter your email address. That's radiohour.hillsdale.edu. And we're joined now by Tom Morrison. He's a 1997 grad of Hillsdale College, currently a prominent lawmaker in the state of Illinois, where he's a state representative serving the 54th district since 2011. That's just outside Chicago in the suburbs. Previously, Tom worked as a radio reporter, also a teacher and a small business owner. And we welcome him on to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Tom, how are you doing?
I'm well. Thanks, Scott.
So we want to start first by talking a bit about your time at Hillsdale College. What do you remember most about your time here at Hillsdale?
Oh, I remember how well the professors cared for us, how I remember how committed the students were to learning and really excelling in their studies. And so I just have very fond memories of Hillsdale.
Now, you've done a bit of everything in your professional career. As I mentioned, radio, teacher, small business owner, now public service. What do you think that you learned at Hillsdale, or how did Hillsdale best prepare you for all of those aspects in your life?
Well, I really think the liberal arts education prepared me and the students who are there today, because, first of all, you have to have a love of learning. You should have a love of learning, a lifetime love of learning. Also, the professors really asked a lot of the students, and there was just a healthy competitiveness among the student body as well. So, I mean, there are times to have fun, but also it's a unique time where, studies are paramount, and I just really profited from the culture there.
So after some years, again, in business world and teaching, you decide to run for public office in Illinois, again, in the Chicago suburbs, as a state rep. Why did you feel called to do so? Why did you feel that public office was the right move for you?
Well, first of all, I was a little bit interested in politics when I was at Hillsdale. Mm-hmm. I never got too involved. I was more interested in specific issues. Mm-hmm. But my first real full-time job after Hillsdale was working as a radio reporter, as you described. And my first job was in Iowa. So it was in a couple of months and years before the 2000 presidential election. So as a young Hillsdale grad, as a reporter, I was interviewing some of these prominent politicians, and I'd ask them questions that were important to me as a reporter, important to me as an American, and I would get these answers that were so convoluted. And so I'd, re-ask the question, and I'd get the same convoluted answer. So I had kind of a low opinion of politicians, mm-hmm. but a high view of statesmen. And so there's actually a Hillsdale grad from 1952, Congressman Phil Crane,
yes.
was my congressman for several years. And so I thought, if ever I were to be in office, I would want to be more the statesman than the politician. So fast forward a few years, I was running my business, and the state of Illinois was running off the rails. I thought the United States was running off the rails. The policies that were being pushed were harmful to today's citizens and future generations. And so some people from my local area, northwest of Chicago, they said, look, if you run, we will support you. So it was a little bit of my interest and opportunity to open, and then also local people that said, we need to support more people like you to be in public office, actually making these decisions with a good grounding of history and a good grounding of economics and, just good public policy.
Tom Morrison with us, a 1997 grad of Hillsdale College, now a state rep in Illinois in the 54th district. Let's define our terms a bit here, Tom. What in your mind is the difference between being a statesman and being a politician, as you sort of described there previously?
Well, this is not my original quote. I don't know who said it first, but it's important that we consider the next generation rather than the next election. And so what I have routinely seen is elected officials make decisions, make votes, push issues that are maybe helpful to them in getting reelected, but not helpful for the next generation, for not helpful in preserving liberty for future generations. And I think of my father, who passed away. He was an Air Force veteran. And I think about my grandfather, who was an Army veteran. I think about my uncle, who is a Navy veteran. And the sacrifices that they made, that our founding fathers made, so that we, in the year 2019, would have liberty, we're going to lose that if we don't have that same level of commitment to policymakers today. And so while I was too old to join the military, I thought this would be a way that I could serve my country, serve my state. And that's what I'm trying to do, and I'm trying to encourage others to get involved, to consider running for office. And then for those who are in office, I want to be as the best influence I can be with them in encouraging them to do what's right, not expedient. Not necessarily expedient, but to do what's right.
Tom, you're a Republican serving in Illinois, a red lawmaker, and what kind of fluctuates between being just a regular old blue and a deep blue state of Illinois. What's it like to be, a conservative lawmaker in a state that is quite liberal?
Well, sometimes it does feel like being a voice crying in the wilderness. but I appreciate, the people who have elected me and reelected me. When I'm down here in Springfield, I think of them. I think if they were in my shoes here on the House floor in Springfield, Illinois, what would they say? How would they cast a vote? And so I just try to be in tune with my district and representing the people who have sent me back here.
Tom Morrison is with us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, a Hillsdale alum and current state representative in the state of Illinois. Tom, I work with students here at Hillsdale, of course, and many students sort of have this goal or vision of getting to D.C., of getting to Washington, working in Washington, and trying to change things or trying to, maintain the status quo, depending on the issue, of course, in our nation's capital. You're working in a state capital in Springfield, Illinois. What kind of opportunities might students be overlooking that are available in state government?
Well, state or even local government.
Sure.
And that is getting your feet wet, so the barrier to entry is a lot lower at the local or state level. You can run and win a very, very grassroots campaign. When I ran my first office, or when I ran the first time, I ran against a Republican incumbent in the primary, and it was my first run for office, and I had a little bit of money for a campaign, but we had a fraction of what the incumbent had. We didn't have the newspaper endorsements. We didn't have the infrastructure that the incumbents had, but we felt that we had the right message, and we were willing to put in the time and energy and effort, and we pulled off a big upset. We won by 8% when everybody had written us off. And so consider the local or state run. The other thing, too, is that there's that whole fish in a pond. You could be a big fish in a small pond or a small fish in a big pond, and you can have a much bigger impact at the local or state level, especially when you're younger. And then if you do want to run for Washington Washington position later, you can do that. Now you have a platform to do it.
Tom Morrison, final question for you here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. You've been doing government now. You've been state rep for nearly a decade now, a little less than that. What's perhaps one thing that people who are not in politics, not working in government, should know that you've learned by working in state government?
I have learned how vast and complex state and federal government is. And we really have gone. So, when I was a student at Hillsdale, I had, you read about in the text and you listen to lectures about how far we have drifted from the vision of the founding fathers. But when you're actually in this position, you see it firsthand. And what it means is we who believe in liberty, we who want to preserve a strong future and a vibrant future for the next generations, we have to have a long vision, because those with a progressive point of view, they have been very patient, they have been very diligent, and we're going to have that same level of commitment to restore back to what the vision that the founders had for our country.
Tom Morrison, a 1997 grad of Hillsdale College, current state representative in Illinois in the 54th District. Tom, thank you so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you, Scott.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to former Michigan Supreme Court Justice and current Hillsdale Professor Stephen Markman for his comments on redistricting in the state of Michigan and how it might inform others around the country. Gail Harriet talked with us about her latest book, A Dubious Expediency, How Race Preferences Damage Higher Education. Ben Beyer with his final installment on the concept of definition. And we just heard State Representative Tom Morrison of Illinois, a Hillsdale graduate. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews, including Gail Harriet this week, or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, or Amazon Podcasts. Just search for the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. To find out more about Hillsdale College, head to hillsdale.edu. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Summer takes flight at Turtle Bay's Wings of Summer Butterfly Exhibit, open June 19th through August 15th. Experience hundreds of butterflies in a tranquil and enclosed garden. Access is free for Turtle Bay members and included with park admission. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Jazz up your weekend breakfast or brunch at Black Bear Diner with a sparkling mimosa made with our fresh-squeezed orange juice and Prosecco. It's a delicious and refreshing sidekick to your favorite omelet, Benedict, or pancake breakfast. At lunch or dinner, add a glass of red or white Kendall Jackson family wine, or choose a domestic, import, or specialty beer to ride along with your favorite entree. Serve daily at Black Bear Diner, 2605 Hilltop Drive.
Black Bear Diner.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson State of Mind.
This is Duncan Shannon for CTCP Flavors Radio. Spot title is On Alert 30 Second Radio. Code number is XCFS0151000. And this hysterical was a mix on March 5th, 2020.
Schools, families, and government leaders are finally on alert over teen vaping. But before we can solve it, we need to understand it. One, the draw is flavors. 97% of kids who vape use flavors. Two, kids often don't know they're vaping nicotine, let alone a concentrated formula. Three, nicotine's addictive, and it's also a neurotoxin that can increase teen anxiety. Nicotine is brain poison, and flavor is the hook. Do something at flavorshookkids.org.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Commons Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide three delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
Dinorama presents Bruise by the Bridge at Turtle Bay Exploration Park on Friday, August 13th. Join us at the Sundell Bridge for this 21 and over event featuring craft beers, live music, tasty food, and more. Get your tickets today at the Turtle Bay Museum or online at turtlebay.org.
You know, it can be difficult to find a trustworthy, knowledgeable, and yet affordable auto repair shop. Advanced Automotive is a second-generation, locally owned, full-service repair shop serving our community since 1993, and one of only four AAA-approved auto repair shops in the Reading area. Advanced Automotive has a goal, and it's to keep it simple to have safe, reliable vehicles for our customers and our community. Call or come by to meet the crew who is here to serve you. 844-4423. Advanced Unlimited.
The world is full of obvious things which nobody by any chance ever observes. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
Before we get started on today's episode, we want your questions. Every December, we talk about specific questions that we receive from you so we can answer them and make sure that we're addressing your specific needs. So if you have a question, contact us, let us know what it is, so we can answer it for you.
There are a couple ways to do that. You can either find us on Facebook, send us a message that way, or of course, the email address at the end of this episode is a great way to contact not only your questions, but episode ideas and commentary about how fantastic my voice is.
So let's get into today's episode. What's the topic?
We are talking about using your senses, not just what I see or what I hear, but what I'm tasting, what I'm smelling. This is a common bit of advice you hear from third grade teachers. Make sure you include all five senses in the scene.
The reason why senses are so important is that it immerses the reader into the moment with something that they can connect with that otherwise they wouldn't understand. While most of your readers may not know what, say, a homeless person who lives on the streets most of the time and never gets a shower smells like, you do know what a boy's gym locker room smells like after a day of football practice. These are small little details that you can connect the dots to give them an idea of the senses of what they're seeing, hearing, tasting, because readers want to be in the moment. They want to be in the world, and the senses is how you do that.
Not necessarily strictly smells, although that is a great one to give an idea of environment. But if your character can taste the rain in the air before the storm, that's something your readers can relate to.
So we mentioned earlier the five senses. We're aware that that's probably what you've been taught. That's what we were taught. That's what we were familiar with. But there are so many more senses than just five.
In this particular case, we're talking about ways that we interact with the world, ways that the world gives our brains information. Not necessarily seeing dead people like the sixth sense or an emotional IQ, these other things that are part of the human experience, but literally how you get information from the world.
Physical interactions. The most common that you're going to be using in a book is vision, what they're seeing.
And this tends to be the default for a lot of storytellers because a lot of storytellers also watch TV, also go to the movie theaters. You see and you hear a lot of things in cinema, and therefore when you're seeing the story play out in your head, it's sight and sound based often.
So that's the second sense, is the hearing. Your third is smell. This can be so important. Because people remember smells really well. There are actually studies linking smell with memory. So if you can introduce them to a smell that they are familiar with, you are connecting them with a story on a new level.
Smell is closely intertwined with taste. They're right next to each other on the face, yes, but a lot of the words you're going to use are very similar. That saltiness, that nuttiness. Talk about tea tasting or wine tasting. They will say a perfuminess to the flavor, the bouquet of the wine.
Speaking as someone who has a lot of allergies that affect my sinuses, your smell affects your taste. If I can't smell anything, I really can't taste much. It has to be a very strong flavor for me to taste it.
This particular list has 9 different kinds. We got that list from TalkingMatters.com. And what we in kindergarten learned as touch is not only texture, something is soft or silky, but also temperature, something is hot or cold, but also pain.
Which also goes with hot and cold because a lot of pain is associated either with hot or with cold.
Those are all kind of in the touch category, but I wanted to make sure we talked about each of these separately because there are different ways for your character to interpret their environment. It is not only cold, but it is sharp.
You can also have balance as one of the senses. This is really important for characters who, I don't know, maybe are drunk, maybe got drugged, who are usually very...
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.